From Little Mountain Sound in Vancouver, British Columbia, this is Lab Notes. And now here's your host, Russ Hamilton.
Hello and welcome to Lab Notes, the Connection Lab podcast. We are very excited you're here. Thank you so much for tuning in. We have a great show for you today. I'm really excited about everybody we're talking to. We're going to visit Las Vegas, Nevada, and a very extraordinary woman who's been through a program and, well, she kind of had to be a participant and learn how to facilitate and design at the same time. Then we go to Wheat Ridge, Colorado, where we talk to a fantastic executive, a young woman who's starting a new gig, and she's going to tell us about her leadership journey and that transition into new employment. And then finally, we go to Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, to talk to Brenda Imes. Brenda works at Canpotex in Saskatoon, and not only is she a participant, but she's helping us, well, create some conscious culture at Canpotex and beyond. So I want to celebrate her and the organization. It's going to be a great conversation. It's going to be a great episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. So let's get started. We are on the phone now with Heidi Harris in Las Vegas, Nevada. Hello, Heidi.
Hello, Russ.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're joining us for this conversation and for these conversations. You've been, well, a pioneer, I think, for merging Connection Lab with a variety of other methodologies and systems and kind of co-creating a leadership journey for one of the companies you used to work for. You're now the head of talent and development at Validity. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yep. Nice. Previously, I was at Return Path and there was an acquisition and I am now working at Validity. And
amazing.
I'm very excited about it.
So great. So let's talk, because you are really unique because you had to both be a participant in a leadership journey program, which lasted like 9 months, and you were also a designer and a facilitator for another cohort in the same program.
Exactly.
So you had schizophrenia going on, and so I'm very curious. I'm going to ask you about your experience as a participant. What do you remember about your experience as a participant in the leadership journey?
You know, it's really interesting that you bring up the point around the dual role that I was playing, because I remember managing the distraction of the dual role, which was completely relevant to what I was learning as a participant. I think, especially as leaders, we are often called on to play multiple roles and put on and take off multiple hats and sometimes wear multiple hats at the same time. So it was actually great practice for me in developing my leadership to be able to manage through that and be able to think about what is it that I'm trying to learn and get better at myself as I'm growing as a leader, and let's focus on that right now. But, ooh, I'm going to make a mental note of that little thing I just noticed in the curriculum design that we might want to change later. And then back to me. Sort of the practice. So I think in a lot of ways, when I think about the concepts of how do I show up under stress, how do I want to show up under stress, being mindful of the different audiences that we are need to be mindful of, it was great practice in a way to have that duality in play.
So that's what comes up for me is duality. Although what you're describing is one objective after another, right? Duality is actually, you know, two things are true in the same place at the same time. So what you're talking about is, oh, I just had an experience as a participant.
Yeah.
And then, oh, I'd like to reflect on what just happened with the perspective of a facilitator and a designer. So
yeah.
It's kind of splitting hairs, but at the same time, duality, you know, this idea that two things can be true in the same place at the same time is just such a mind blower. So I think that's interesting. So I'm visualizing you in front of the room. I'm visualizing you as a participant, with some, you know, personalized content you've created.
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember about that experience?
I remember I had a really clear intention around what I wanted to practice. And specifically, there was a piece at the end of our first session with the group where we were putting together business presentations. And we had spent 2.5 days or so learning a lot of skills around Connection Lab and having to put them into practice, presenting a business presentation to, I think we invited the whole company. Or was it just the Colorado office? I can't remember.
It was London was online and all the offices worldwide were invited and many showed up.
So about 420 people were invited to this presentation. And I was being very mindful of the concept you teach around our relationship to content. Because I know I can get very focused on my content. Maybe overly so at times. And as I was working with my team, I observed that happening because suddenly we have an audience of executives and colleagues to do a presentation, and suddenly it became about the content. And I remember having a bit of a rub with one of my colleagues because my view, and I felt very strongly about this, was I actually don't care that much about the content. I don't care if it's good or well thought out or hits on or showcases my strategic thinking abilities. I really wanted to practice what I wanted to practice.
What do you remember about what you wanted to practice?
I wanted to practice connection.
Yeah.
Above content.
Yeah.
Really creating that connection between me and the audience and helping them feel seen and heard as we went through our presentation in a much deeper way than I had done previously. And so I didn't want to be distracted by the content.
And how'd that go?
It went really well. I think, well, it went well for me.
Right.
Because I got to practice what I wanted to practice, you know. It was funny because I remember even talking with my group a little bit afterward and them saying, ooh, our content should have been a little better. But it felt really good to let go of all the expectations a little bit. I was thinking about the idea of that you teach around permission to fail and succeed. And it was very freeing to give myself permission to not be so focused on, am I doing it the way people are expecting me to do it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that lands really well on me. I mean, predictably. And has it reoccurred to you our attachment to content? Have you seen how you or others show up under stress in terms of your relationship with your content? Does it dominate in other areas since that experience? Have you noticed?
You know, as I think about that question, I think it dominates a lot.
Yeah. Good.
In a lot of places.
Yeah.
And for myself and for others. And it's been an interesting experience in the last couple of months because I am noticing myself in some ways letting go of the content to a point.
Mm.
I've been thinking about that saying, I'm probably going to get this wrong, which is fine. The enemy of good is great. If we're striving so much to be perfect, we're actually missing what's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I've been giving myself permission recently to say, what's the problem we're trying to solve? And then let's find the best way to do it that's efficient, that's not going to create all kinds of unneeded extra work, that's really going to be good enough for what we're trying to achieve without driving ourselves crazy, trying to go overboard, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I have to breathe into that because it's a profound reality for me and for almost everybody I work with.
Yeah.
This idea that my relationship to my audience, the competencies associated with my relationship to my audience, are the same as the competencies associated with my relationship to my content.
Yeah.
That if I work harder on my content, my audience will feel seen. Mm. And they don't. So you know what I'm going to do is work harder on my content.
Right.
Because that'll really get them.
Right.
And it doesn't. They check their phone. They don't feel seen. They don't feel heard. They don't feel necessary. We're not co-creating anything in the room. We're not collaborating in any way. Somebody's just trying to jam content through somebody's ear.
Yeah.
So.
And we all do it.
Well, that's been my experience. And it's fascinating because even people in front of the room who've just had a profound experience connecting with people in the audience and getting people to raise their hand and giving feedback to a presenter and saying, I've never felt so seen by you. I've never seen you bigger, stronger, more powerful. I would love it if you could continue to put connection with me and others ahead of your content. I think that's where our goals as an enterprise can be reached. And they go, wow, that is such powerful content. Let me write that down and lean on my content even further. It's almost like a muscle memory.
Mm-hmm.
Like my body remembers to emphasize content and filter everything through the importance of content.
Well, I think there's something safer about content than relationship.
With a human being.
With a human being.
I think you're right. And then I think now we're talking about vulnerability.
Yes.
What do you remember about that? What do you remember about connecting with the audience one at a time?
I remember feeling more comfortable with it than I thought I would be.
Mm.
With being able to connect with people as I was up in front of a room speaking. And I am aware with myself that I'm not that comfortable showing vulnerability.
Yeah.
So that's something I've been more aware of is let it go a little bit.
Is that what you're trying to get better at?
Yeah. I'm trying to be like Elsa. Let it go.
Are you going to burst into song? Are we going to, is something choreographed? Did I miss rehearsal?
I think I'll save that for later.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Getting better at it. I think it's a difficult line to walk in a way between wanting to show up as an expert and as someone who's credible and who has a perspective about what's to happen around strategy to meet the goals and drive the business and like bring that self forward and show vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
And I know intellectually the two are not mutually exclusive. They're symbiotic, and yet they feel exclusive sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and in support of what you just said, I'm in my head. You know, this idea that in my mind, connecting with somebody or inviting somebody into relationship silently and just being curious about them is terrifying.
Yeah.
Is just terrifying. Oh my God. I've been in relationship and they are not, right? In my mind, I've worked myself up into assuming that relationship with somebody where we each feel seen by the other and not just looked at or less is the greatest threat in the world, which is why facilitating this work, I call it being a lifeguard.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're sitting up there in the wooden tower chair. And you're watching people in the pool and you're making sure nobody goes under too long.
Yeah.
Because they are facing tremendous fears up there around vulnerability. And then they actually connect with somebody and somebody raises their hand and go, oh, I totally feel seen by you. And not for nothing. I really like having your attention. I really like feeling seen by you. And it's like, well, that's not half as bad as I thought it would be. That's impossible. Let me try somebody else.
Right.
Right. And then you move on to the next person and they go, oh, look at that. Wow. You're so great.
Right.
When you just are curious about me.
Yes.
And then that's the essence of collaboration.
Yeah.
So when you're designing an experience, when you're trying to solve a problem, the word that comes up for me is, are we collaborating on it? like honestly, right? Because if we're collaborating on it, if everybody in the room is contributing to whatever it is we decide we're going to do, then we all own it. It doesn't matter who the authority is, whose badge is the biggest.
Yeah.
And that's where enterprises can apply strategy like they've never been able to before.
I love this conversation because I think that maybe not even realizing it, this is part of the shift that I've been trying to make in how I work and how I, it's something I've been working on to get better at, is that shift from content audience and how are we engaging our stakeholders and working with people as we go along in the work. I've joined this new company that hasn't been around that long. They're still building a lot. And so as we started talking about leadership development, I was brainstorming with my team and we said, gosh, how do we get leadership development off the ground? And the thought occurred to me that what's our vision? Do we have a vision for how we define leadership? And through our conversation, the idea we came up with was to engage leaders from different parts of the organization that had come through acquisitions or had been hired just to work at Validity. And engage them in a conversation of how would they define leadership. And then through that process, our next step is to share that with the executives to get their input on how do you think about leadership and how does this resonate with how you want to define a vision for leadership for our company. And it's been a really interesting process and experience to co-collaborate.
Yeah.
I guess collaboration is co-collaboration.
Yeah. Well, and that's
but to engage people in the process has been really, really amazing to see what they've come up with. And it's practice. There's a million times a day I'm like, oh yeah, that was very content focused.
And
it's all you know, I still have like so much in my journey to keep progressing through.
Amazing. Isn't that interesting? Right? It's not right. It's not wrong. It's not good. It's not bad. It just is. And it's so interesting. What's the best thing that can happen is another great question. If our subject is leadership, and you can just roll that into the room, what's the best thing that can happen for our organization? And aim high. Aim crazy high. And then just start writing down what they say. So good.
Yeah, I love that question.
Do you have any questions?
I should use that question more.
I'm offering it to you. I'm offering it to you.
I'm taking it.
Yep, nice. It's like go fish. If I put a card down, you can have that one. Do you have any questions for me?
Oh, do I have questions for you?
I don't know.
Not right this moment.
Amazing.
I'll think about that.
Yeah, do it. And you know
if I have any.
I'm a text away.
Yes, I love that.
So good. Heidi Harris from Validity, thank you so much for joining us today.
You bet. Thanks so much, Russ.
Absolutely. More to come.
Looking forward to it.
So if you're tuning in because somebody recommended it, but you've really never had any experience with Connection Lab, you've never been to a workshop, you don't know what we're talking about, you can get more information about what we do at connectionlaboratory.com. That's our website. It's got a ton of information. What we do is communication, presentation, and leadership development in a series of workshops, executive development programs, and leadership journey programs. So you can listen and you can read along. You can also contact us if you want to. Just know that you're welcome. And I really appreciate you tuning in. We continue our conversations today. We're talking to Brianna Connolly. Hello, Brianna.
Hello.
Brianna, you're working for a new organization. You've just made a transition. Can you tell us who these people are and what the enterprise is?
Yes, my new company is Integrate. If anybody follows sports or Olympics, it's Jeremy Bloom's company.
Oh.
He's a former Olympian and a former NFL athlete.
Amazing.
Yes, and I have been hired to help them create a data strategy. And kind of unearth all of the amazing value that they have.
So good. Brianna, you are a graduate of the Leadership Journey.
I am.
Can you speak to what you remember about that experience? What's top of mind for you?
Of course. I think that experience and that journey allowed me to be observational about myself in a way that wasn't judgmental, so that I could progress and move forward and get better at things that I noticed that maybe I wanted to get better at, instead of guilt and shame about not being good at it or not showing up how I wanted to.
Yeah.
So,
I'm shaking my head in agreement. I'm like, boy, does that resonate for me? That, without judgment or correction. So what have you noticed about how you show up under stress, and how is it different from how you would choose to?
Yes. Well, I think in the past I would sort of react and then I'd feel really guilty about reacting maybe in not the most awesome, perfect way that I could have. Mm-hmm. And the cycle would just repeat. Yeah. And I wouldn't really know how to get out of it. I'd feel bad if I tried to think about it because then I'd think about how I, you know, sounded like an idiot or whatever it is, or got, you know, too sassy or something. And so I would never make improvement because then I'd feel bad and I'd just shift my thought away from it because I don't like to spend a lot of time in sadness or negative emotions. I would get on out of there.
Let's book it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if I have to fake it.
Exactly. And so this really allowed me to, if I do react, really it's not a negative. It's like, oh, okay, interesting. I showed up like that. What could I have done differently? What can I do differently? Mm. Is it controllable? Mm. And so it's just made it really easy, especially when starting a new job and you're being fire hosed and you're under a microscope by a lot of people who have advocated for you to be there.
Yeah.
It's just been good to look at it and say, oh, I'd like to show up this way instead of another way.
Amazing. Amazing. So what do you remember about getting up on stage?
Well, I remember that the first time we got up on stage, it was just, for lack of better words, a total shit show.
Hang on, let me get a pen.
I think, total. Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. I think nobody stood out in like a, oh, you're just a natural, right? Including myself. Mm. It was just forced. I think the achievers in the group were trying to do that. And then there was a component of the group that was just falling apart. But I think in terms of getting up to start, we didn't know how to breathe. We didn't know how to connect. I didn't know how to connect with an audience. I would just start talking.
Yeah. Let's breathe now. Filling the lungs from the bottom up. So good. What else do you remember?
Gosh. Also just honestly that people want you to succeed.
Yeah. They're rooting for you.
Yes. And that has been such a huge thing for me moving forward. People want you to do well. People want you to show up in a great way. And if you solicit help and advice and get feedback from them, you can continue to grow. So it's been really fun to be able to know that I can get better with others' feedback without it being awkward.
Mm. Amazing. And how are you talking to others? Are you modeling this? Are you transparent about what you're working on and what your methodology is?
Yes. It's actually been really easy, again, to start a new job because I can kind of lay my cards on the table of this is what I'd like to get better at. Or, hey, I'm open to feedback at this time. Do you have any? Mm. Things like that that allow me to build trust pretty quickly with somebody. And, you know, I can also ask others, are you open to feedback? And are there things that... you know, I can help with. I think in this, I've learned to ask a lot more questions of myself and others instead of just making assumptions. Mm. I'm really good at creating these grandiose stories in my head. And often when I just ask a question, it's not true at all, or it's simple and not that way. So,
are people allowed to say no when you ask if they're open to feedback?
Absolutely. And they totally do.
Really?
Yes, I try to do the, are you open to feedback on family members? And my mom will say, no, no, I'm not.
Well, and it saves us time, Mom.
Right?
It saves us time. Are you open to feedback? I am not open to feedback. Okay, let's carry on.
Right,
I'm not going to waste my time. I'm not going to start a fight. I'm not going to try and force something on you. If you're not open to feedback, let's move on in the conversation.
Exactly. Yeah, and for others as well at work, especially those who have gone through leadership journey, it's definitely a common thing to ask, are you open to feedback? And someone will say, I'm not right now.
It's a very generous answer.
Yes.
Right? And it's also a very generous question. Are you open to feedback? Because, you know, when it comes to feedback, and you may remember I talked about this, you know, I divide feedback into two categories, solicited and unsolicited. So if we have a practice of asking for feedback, are you getting what you need from me? Is there anything you need more of from me? Is there anything you need less of from me? You know, these are feedback questions that I can practice on a regular basis or on a periodic basis or even, you know, twice a year. or, and that way I solicit feedback. That way I'm asking for people to talk to me about how I'm showing up for them. And that way, you know, if I have a pattern of it, then the data I'm getting is so vast, I don't need to hold it as precious. When I have a feedback conversation like twice a year, the feedback I get is sacred. It's precious. It's weighty. It's heavy. But if I have a daily practice of just kind of checking in with people, then all of a sudden, you know, I have this huge database. And that becomes its own practice and its own value. The other side is unsolicited feedback. And let me tell you something. If somebody in my world is, you know, gunning for some feedback here, the way they're behaving, the way they're talking, the way they're showing up, and boy, they better stop that or I'm going to have to say something. And now all this energy is built up and it continues until finally it just explodes. And this idea that unsolicited feedback is a volcano. And somebody's sitting there, you know, having a tuna sandwich, and somebody goes, I have just got to, you know, freak out. You've got to stop chewing so loud, or whatever the feedback is. But chances are it's something quite different. And then, of course, it comes across as a threat. So feedback is either solicited or unsolicited. That's a big division in the world of feedback. And, of course, there's other places to go, but that's kind of the head of the river for me. Does that resonate for you?
Oh, definitely. It's changed, yeah, the way I deliver and receive it so that it's not that big explosion or that, oh, thank God, here's 6 months of grievances. Like Frank, or yeah, George Costanza's dad, Frank. I've got a lot of problems with you people.
Oh, that's Festivus, right?
Yep.
It's been building up over months. This is a feedback conversation. So, and that can dissolve trust. It can dissolve healthy relationships. It can dissolve, you know, productive relationships, and that can be very difficult to recover from. And all of a sudden, we have a cultural issue because somebody blew up in the boardroom because they just couldn't handle something, and there was no solicited feedback practice. And so, yeah, I don't think what we're talking about is a shock to anybody. I think it's pretty familiar. But there's a methodology that helps us avoid it. How else do you talk about this?
Oh, goodness. Well, I honestly, it was just a journey, right? I like to brag that I've done this and that we've put on an off-Broadway play.
You did it.
And so two things. One, nobody understands my sheer delight with counting down and waving your hands and feet. And I think only people who have done it will understand how it brings me so much joy.
It took me a second to kind of remember what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. So that's a physical warm-up we're talking about.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's something that as a group we've done before, really, really intense meetings or a layoff or anything giant. But the main thing that I talk about is just how it was a journey. You know, we first met in a July, and then about 9 months later we met again, and it was an entirely different group.
Yeah.
Who over those 9 months had the ability to learn and execute and kind of beef up on new skill sets. So that when we got there in April, 9 months after the first time we met, we just were completely different processors.
Yeah.
And we reacted differently to things. We interpreted things differently. We had trust with each other. It was just an amazing thing to grow so much in 9 months and to be reminded of things that maybe used to bother you or you used to feel really bad about, and now it wasn't the same.
Mm. So our last workshop was very intense.
Yes.
Because the company you were working for got acquired, and there were people in the room who were now redundant.
Yes.
And that news literally landed for some people the night before. So if the question is, how do we show up under stress? You know, well, I think I just became redundant in my company. And now I'm totally freaking out. So there's no the stress to that point had been contrived in this environment. Safe stress, contrived stress. This was capital R real. And we gave the option to your group to bail. Is there a better way you'd like to spend this 2.5 days in New York City? Like maybe searching for a job. And nobody did. Nobody left. And I thought that was quite a testament to the group and to the quality of work we were doing, because they said, this is more valuable. Finishing what we started is more valuable than going on, you know, some job website or making phone calls, because we can do that tonight or whenever. Mm-hmm. But I really want to know how this finishes. So you had a very unique experience. And when you say we did an off-Broadway play, can you describe that for people listening? What does that mean?
Yes. So we had to, in less than 2.5 days, create a story, create a play, write a play, cast people, direct it, do the music, the lighting, everything. The props. I mean, we were walking around New York City looking for a mini drum kit and a, you know, cymbals and like a harmonica for props. And it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of stress, but it was incredibly enjoyable after 9 months of learning how to show up under stress.
Yeah. So people listening are like, so wait, you're doing Les Mis? You know, what was the play about? What was the theme?
If I recall our deep story, we actually connected it, I think, with the acquisition.
Oh, right.
And ours was about this kind of big ego, but washed up rock star who had sort of bailed on his band and was going to go start something else. And then he realized that, you know, they were going to put on one last show. So it was going to be the greatest show, and just kind of all of the emotion and gratefulness about being with this group of people and being able to create, and then getting closure on the band, the last show. And there were lots of just silly, ridiculous things that I'm sure only we as a group knew, but it was very healing. And I think it was for that group, closure.
Yeah.
In terms of, like you said, a lot of people we had to say goodbye to.
Yeah. Do you remember that exercise? Goodbye, hello.
Yes.
That was intense too.
Yes, it was.
Do you say goodbye and hello now?
I do. Yeah. And leaving this job, I left over the holidays. And so in terms of hello, goodbye, I did it in cards and emails and, you know, connecting with people when I could. And it was interesting to see it across all kinds of mediums that there was a new hello.
Yeah. How are you with goodbye, hello?
I'm a lot better than I was. I think, you know, I have had losses personally and professionally that I think I can look at in a different light now. There is always a new thing, right? It's kind of the grateful part of saying goodbye to what you had and all of the goodness in it. And then also the opportunity to say hello to something new and to, not always be excited, but it's bittersweet to say hello. So,
yeah. Well, it kind of takes us back to the beginning, right? Am I so emotional about saying goodbye that I'm not present for saying hello?
Right.
Right. Does the person I'm saying hello to feel seen and heard? So I kind of get to start again, and the cycle gets to begin again. So again, it all comes back to practice. It's all just practice.
Yeah, it really is.
Do you have any questions for me?
When is Leadership Journey 2.0?
So good. I'm actually talking to the leaders of the original design of Leadership Journey and their new company. And so you can imagine there's quite an appetite because it's a watermark, you know.
Yes. So
that conversation's already taking place. And you're part of the Connection Lab network worldwide. And we have over 1,000 graduates worldwide now.
Wow.
And so that's one of the reasons we wanted to do the podcast, because we needed a central place for people to tune in, listen, participate, text, email, and a place for us to hang out and practice and just shoot hoops and warm up. And so all of that information, you know, how this continues to progress will all be transparent. I'm going to offer all of it. And I will tell you that on top of this podcast, we're also doing a facilitator development program for Connection Lab.
Awesome.
So we're encouraging people who are interested to contact us about becoming a facilitator. And we're looking forward to launching that program later this year.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So continuing to grow and learn and try and practice what we ask others to practice.
I love it.
That's it.
And
so that's
easy.
It. Yeah. Brianna, thank you so much for joining us today. It is always such a treat to talk to you, and I really appreciate your transparency and what you're trying to get better at. And I look forward to further conversations, and let the journey continue.
Thank you. I can't tell you how much I've grown and just how much I appreciate you, because I would not be the leader that I am or could be without these skill sets.
High five. Bring it in.
Yes, high five.
There it is. Thank you, Brianna.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Lab Notes is a practice room for Connection Lab participants, for audience members, executive program clients, and anyone else who has participated in one of our leadership journeys. We talk with guests about their experience, their practice, their success and failure, and we support everyone trying to get better in the process. Check out the Lab Notes menu online at podcast.connectionlaboratory.com. You're also welcome if you've never done a Connection Lab workshop and really have no idea what we're talking about, but you think maybe we might be on to something. I invite you to inform our process and our content by texting us at any time, 646-780-9946, or send us an email at info@connectionlaboratory.com. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, you can email us at guestplease@connectionlaboratory.com. We are back talking to amazing people, and we're very excited to have Brenda Imes with us. Welcome, Brenda.
Thank you. It's awesome to always connect with you.
So nice of you to be here. You're contacting us in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan.
In frozen Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, yes. It's like minus 40 with the wind chill.
Seriously?
Seriously, yeah.
Okay.
It's a very, very cold day, but you know, we're made of prairie stock, so we're used to it.
It's amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and the first question pops to mind is, how do I show up under stress? Because for me, minus 40 counts as stress. Oh my goodness. So we're talking about the Connection Lab experience. You did a workshop not quite a year ago. I was up in Saskatoon, and we did several workshops. You work for Canpotex, is that correct?
Canpotex, yes.
Yes. And what do you do for this organization?
So my role is the organizational development specialist.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Nice. So you were a big part of orchestrating my coming up there.
I was, one of the reasons why we hired you is, if I could step back a bit, like Canpotex is, we're such a diverse workforce and we have offices in 5 countries.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, like, I'm so fortunate, we have amazing people here and we believe in the continuous growth and creating a culture and environment where all of our employees can become their best selves, can be and become their best selves. And so you actually, I got to know you through our leadership development and you were hired to teach our executive level senior executives and directors.
Yes.
And that's how then because you did such a phenomenal job there, it's like we need this training with all of our employees, especially when we invest in leadership skills and competencies in all of our employees, regardless of their position. So thus our relationship began.
Amazing. High five.
I know. High five.
Here it is right there. Okay, good.
Me too.
So it's all theory. All of these conversations, everything you've heard about me, everything you've heard about Connection Lab, and then it's your time to come into the conference room at the hotel in Saskatoon, and you and several other people showed up, and suddenly theory becomes practice.
Yes.
What do you remember about that moment and the beginning of our workshop?
I remember the very first thing, we were all nervous. It was a very small group. I believe that you max people, like the classroom size, to 8, which is a great way to create that psychological safety. And what you did was you asked us to tell a story that no one else in the room knows about you. So
right.
Introduce yourselves.
Right. What is something we might find surprising about you?
Exactly.
And what did you learn about your peers? And what did they learn about you?
Oh, so-and-so from finance is a Scrabble champion. Like, who knew? Who knew? Or so-and-so from, you know, operations, lived in Norway.
Yeah.
So doing that exercise alone expanded our concept of each other, who we are as humans.
Yep.
Which I thought was phenomenal.
And then we got to kind of add to their name what we found surprising about them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So Scrabble champ. Right? So for the rest of the day, we'd say, oh, there's this person and they're the Scrabble champ. And everybody would laugh and go, you are. That's such a great thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I thought I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then what happened?
Well, then you asked us, well, then you explained the content, right? What we're going to look at. And it's like, how do we show up under stress? How do I want to show up under stress? And what do I want to get better at? And then you had us write our leadership journey or our leadership legacy.
Yeah. Writing exercise, 10 minutes.
Yeah. 10 minutes. 10 minutes only.
Yeah. For something that, you know, deserves a manifesto.
Exactly.
What the heck is up with that?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And how was that experience for you?
Well, I think, for me, it put me in a place of vulnerability because it's like, oh my goodness, I never thought of this. Mm. Like, what does that mean? Like, what is your leader? I think it's because of the word legacy is such a huge, epic word. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? So you're immediately put in a place of vulnerability. And what does your leadership legacy mean? So because you're in a place of vulnerability, you're in a place of stress.
Yeah.
Right? High stress.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So why did you use that as your opening exercise?
So if you look at the 6-box model, and I don't know if you have that in front of you, the three questions, which you've already mentioned, how do I show up under stress? How do I want to? And what do I want to get better at? The bottom three are the three primary relationships.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to communication, we have three primary relationships in play. Relationship to self, right? How's my breathing, my hydration, my sleep? Relationship to content.
Like,
what is my content? What do I make every day? What artifacts do I create every day? And what if they're just conversations? Do those count? What value am I bringing to the enterprise? What education and experience am I bringing to work? And how do I value it? And how does work value it? So anyway, that's all relationship to content. And then there's relationship to audience.
Yeah.
Does my audience feel seen? Does my audience feel heard? And who decides? Who decides? If I'm the presenter and you're the audience, who decides if you feel seen?
Well, yeah, the audience.
You do.
Oh, I do.
Right? See, if I'm the presenter and you're the audience, you decide if you feel seen.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so what I wanted to do with the writing exercise is ask a profound, heavy question because I want to emphasize the power of our relationship to content because the purpose of the exercise was to pull away from that and invest in relationship in the audience. And if the content were light, it would be easy to do. It would be easier to do.
Mm-hmm.
But if the content is heavy and meaningful to me, because people got up there and talked about their kids. They talked about their family. My leadership legacy, you know, is really kind of important thing to me. And so the piece of paper in my hand became really important to me, which is, again, contrived stress. Because the purpose of the exercise was to connect with the audience, emphasize connection with the audience ahead of your connection to the content.
Yeah.
And people would say, sure, no problem. And then they struggled.
Yep.
So the reason I asked such a potent question was to add weight to the bar.
Yeah.
Because the truth is everybody in the room is really good at creating relationship. But in the context of separating what makes communication up, deconstructing communication into self, content, and audience. We got to have what I thought were really valuable conversations about where our attention went under stress when we were presenting in front of the room. And where it went was to content.
Yep.
Right? And I said, okay, that's not the purpose of the exercise. The purpose of the exercise is to try and connect with the audience. Wow.
Yeah.
And that's what you did. And that's what everybody did. So does that answer your question?
It does. And it's a great refresher.
Yeah.
Because, there's so many things that were, when I recall back, so many things that were happening simultaneously.
Yes.
You know, with me, it was, how do I show up under stress? My breathing is fast. My heart rate is fast.
Yeah.
Let's
take a breath now. Now that you've mentioned it, let's take a breath.
Exactly. I'm under stress right now. And it's interesting. It's like, why is that? Because I'm in my safe space, in my office. I'm just happening to have a conversation with you. Mm-hmm. But let me take a deep breath.
Let's breathe. Like, there it is.
Thanks.
Oh, high five.
High five.
Good. Okay, good. Nice.
So this is it in action. This
exactly.
is like what we did in your session in action. So it's a practice. It's not like a one-off where we've taken the session. No, it's a constant practice.
Yeah.
So yeah, simultaneously you're stressed. You're also thinking about the content, but what is the relationship with the audience? Have I invited them? Are you being seen and heard?
Yeah. And remember, I don't decide. I might be asking the question, but I don't decide for you. If I don't decide as the presenter, what am I responsible for?
As the presenter?
Yeah,
the invitation,
that's
my
it.
Offer.
Nice. Yeah. The invitation and the offer. That's it. That's all I'm responsible for.
Yeah.
I don't decide for you if you feel seen and heard. I can want you to feel seen and heard, but I don't decide when you do or don't.
Yeah.
And that one thing where our autonomy ends and the nature of our community begins.
That's where communication lies.
That's it.
Yeah.
And
that
so.
That was the aha moment for me as
beautiful.
Well.
Nice.
Yeah.
So.
Incredible.
Yeah. What else do you remember? Because now you're both presenter and audience, right? So you took your turn as a presenter.
Yes.
But you also, you didn't go first. There were other people ahead
no.
of you.
Exactly. Yeah. And what else did I remember?
Yeah, what else do you remember? And I love to ask this because I'm always curious how people learn.
Well, it was, you did. You had such a knack in creating safety under really stressful moments. And what I've learned is that every single person in that room was vulnerable, including
yeah.
myself, obviously.
Yeah.
We were afraid of making that connection
yeah.
to the audience, but we learned how to, and you coached us through every step of the way and encouraged us. And what I saw was the bravery and the courage, even the physical manifestation of how people reacted under stress that was brought to our cognitive forefront of like, oh, that's what's happening. Yes, I see that. Oh, that's what I'm doing. Yes, I get that.
Nice.
And at the same time, there's the validation from the audience that, you know, if we are connecting and being seen and heard, the audience, then one of the exercises was raise your hand.
Yeah.
If you or walk closer. Like it was, so it wasn't, yeah, it was profound. It was one of the best learning experiences because it was experiential learning. It was learning in action.
Yeah. So
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
So have you become a better audience too?
Mm-hmm.
Can you speak to that?
Well, I've become a lot more understanding and empathetic when someone is presenting, it's important to listen and to connect with them and to nod and to smile and encourage. There are silent cues you give presenters to help them know you're doing great, you're doing a good job, keep going. So yeah, when people are presenting, that's all they need. Right. I honestly think so, because then it's not about, you know, you're not focusing on their stress. You're not focusing. They actually start to actually create that relationship that, you know, with the audience. So.
Well, and I suspect we've both been in the audience when the presenter was less than relaxed. Right? When the presenter is in their head, when they're judging themselves. Have you been in the room when the presenter opens with, okay, so what I've written is really bad and I'm very terrible at this. Let's get started.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you're there with 40 people going, oh no. Oh no. Right? They've already judged themselves. Or they begin with an apology.
Yes.
I'm just so, so very sorry that I exist and that I'm here. And that I'm going to do to you what I'm about to do. Okay, let's get started.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
And I my heart just reaches out to them because not only do I want a good experience, but I know how valuable they are. I know how great their content is, and I know how good they are at creating relationship. It's just under the stress of this context that it's all just gone down the crapper.
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. And we all do that, right? And it's so, it's at some point, but it's being, becoming aware of yourself, right?
Yes.
Of that. And then, and the impact it does have on creating that relationship with the audience.
Well, and what that triggers for me is that awareness when I notice when I'm being judgmental or curious. Because mm-hmm. I can't be both at the same time.
Exactly.
I can't be judging myself.
Yeah.
And I'm really good at that.
Yeah.
And curious about you, like legitimately curious at the same time. It's yes. one or the other.
Yeah.
And so whenever I'm presenting or communicating and I'm in my own head, that's me noticing how I show up under stress.
Yeah.
And then the second question evolves. Is this how I want to? Oh, you know what I want to get better at? Is actually being curious in this environment.
Yeah.
So I'm going to look at somebody in the audience who there's a chance they're looking at me and they have a smile or their eyes are bright or they're available for a connection.
Yeah.
And if I can practice that competency, then all of a sudden I'm putting connection with the audience and invitation ahead of my relationship with my content. So what's it like to let go of content?
Well, the thing is, most people who deliver content are usually already experts
in their field.
In their field, right? Yes. So they know the content inside out. And once they realize that they know the content, then it becomes less about, it's just what you said, it becomes less about the content and again, the relationship with the audience.
Yes. Well, yeah. What I'm forced to do is trust the content.
Exactly.
And I don't trust anything easily.
Yes.
I don't trust anything easily, let alone, oh, believing that my content is good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What I do is go, oh, the content's never good enough. Because I assume that the competencies associated with my relationship with content are the same as the competencies associated with my relationship to my audience.
Yeah.
And they are not the same, right? So if I change the wording on page 38 of the deck in order to improve my relationship with the audience, that's not going to work,
mm-hmm.
right? Connecting with the audience is its own set of competencies. And this process of trusting the content, of just going, look, you know what I mean. And if you don't, let's co-create it.
Exactly.
Right? What would be valuable? Yeah. If I'm looking at the audience, pick a number, 25, 50, 100 people, what would be valuable for the time we have allotted for this? What would be useful? And aim high. Because I have a whole deck here. I've got so many pages that so many people have worked on and a lot of expensive graphics, and it's fantastic. I don't mind telling you, it's fantastic. But I don't know if that's useful.
Yep.
Can you tell
me? In fact, that alone was influential in how I delivered one of our performance management sessions this time around. Instead of me doing it, okay, we're in our year-end performance review process right now. Here are the learning objectives, da-da-da-da. What I did was, you know, year-end conversations, everything you wanted to know about performance conversations. Mm-hmm. And I wrote no learning objectives. It was, okay, so what do you guys want to know? So, and that was, again, the content was developed in real time. And it turned out very well.
Not bad.
Go ahead.
No, not bad. I'm just rooting for you.
Yeah, it was, and this was because of, again, the what you have taught us. And it's a continuous practice, right?
Yeah.
But it is about the audience. What do they need? So I know the content about performance management at Campitex.
Yeah.
Is content hitting the needs of the audience? Mm. So it goes beyond. Yeah, you're right. It goes beyond content, but it's still very much about the content too.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, what I like to do, because people are listening to us right now going, guys, the content's really important. This is crap. You know, the content is so
important. Is this live?
No, but it will be.
Oh. Okay.
I mean, yes, we're alive, but we're recording for a future date.
Okay,
but they're listening. They're listening to it's live for the people who are listening to this, and they are going, I don't buy this for a second. The content is way more important than they're framing it, because this element has come up in other conversations. And what I say about that is, and I don't know if I told you, I may have, the story of the two Hamlet shows I saw in 1 week in New York City. Mm-hmm. Right. So on a Monday, I had to go see a friend in Hamlet, and it sucked. It was just terrible. It was a dark room. The chairs were uncomfortable. The actors weren't great. It wasn't well directed. The lighting wasn't good. It was a long play. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really care because the actors didn't do a great job. And I found out later, I went backstage to visit my friend, and he's like, oh, you showed up. And I'm like, yeah, I showed up. And he said, you know, oh, I'll buy you a beer. I'm like, no, you'll pay my rent. That was excruciating. And he said, yeah, no, our stage manager quit last week, and so we kind of had to recover. I'm like, you knew that it sucked, and we still showed up. So I had to get over that. And then I had to go see another one on Thursday night in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And I was dreading it. I was just, because I'm now predisposed that Hamlet sucks. Hamlet's a terrible play. And I went to go to this magnificent theater, and right out of the gate, there was people on stage. It was the Danish court, right? So there's these amazing costumes and live musicians and people dancing and talking and eating food on stage. And I felt like I was joining a festival. And it was so fantastic. And the play was so beautifully directed. And the costume designer and the lighting designer and the pro, everybody did such a good job. The play mm-hmm. went by so fast. And everybody died in the end. People I cared about. It was like, oh, no. So I always talk about that because the play in both instances was exactly the same. The content was the same.
Mm-hmm.
But in the first one, the production sucked and it was terrible. It was punishing. In the second one, it was fantastic. So what are the elements? This is why content measures lower on the element that needs the most attention. If we trust the content, if we trust that Shakespeare wrote a really good play 400 plus years ago, and mm-hmm. there's evidence to suggest that he did, then we need to invest in all the other competencies that help us connect with each other, have us with clear calls to action, and help us fulfill the potential of what theater can be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true for business content.
Yep.
If we swap out Hamlet for a financial quarterly review or for, you know, performance reviews or some kind of thing like that, it's still a play. And
yes.
we can co-create it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you're right. Content is important, but it is my point with a year end. That particular example is the customization that occurred within that moment of learning that helped co-create. The audience was co-creating mm-hmm. and engaging in what do they need out of this content that will help them be the best that they can be.
Yeah. So good. What are you trying to get better at right these days?
Oh, I'm still, well, I just want to say everything.
Yeah. But we know that's a cop-out, right?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So points and?
You know, I am such an analytical person. And so it's easy and comfortable for me to speak using numbers or some stats or analysis. What I'm trying to get better at is it's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to be curious. It's okay to be not right. And because that is the place where you are always learning.
Mm.
So, yeah, amazing. That is all. That's going to be my, so if I may, my dad used to tell me something, always tell, remind me this saying that, you know, Brenda, everyone knows something you don't. And I would remember like, what are you talking about? You know, aside from the implied humbleness within that statement, but it was when I actually just heard it, when I heard everyone knows something you don't, that actually kind of began my lifelong journey of learning and being curious about other people. So I keep that saying close to my heart, and especially as an organizational development specialist, I may be trained in the ways of adult education and how to implement good programs, but are these programs fitting the need of the business? Are they fitting the need of the people within that business that actually create the value for the business? So
meeting people where they are.
Meeting people where they are. Yes. You are so better, much better at encapsulating it in one statement than I am.
Yeah. No, I'm picking up what you're dropping down. We're co-creating this together, I promise you. We're doing it together. That's just great. It's just great. Do you have any questions for me?
Well, do you feel seen and heard?
At the moment?
Mm-hmm.
Very much.
What makes you feel seen and heard?
Well, at the moment, I'm responding to your invitation. You ask me questions, you offer me stories, you offer me your experience. I'm asking you questions and you're responding. We're matching each other's language. We're building on what each other is saying. We're giving each other permission. This whole conversation has been an act of conscious co-creation. And it's only possible because I feel seen and heard. Do you feel seen and heard?
I do.
Yeah.
Can I ask you one more question?
Please.
What is your leadership legacy?
This. The workshop you attended, the people in the room, you know, there were people in the room who were very shy. Do you remember?
I do.
Right?
Yes.
And they were just terrified to get up on stage. And they'd been worried for days. They were just terrified because they've got this story about themselves, about whether they can communicate at all or present at all, and how they judge themselves, and it's not a kind process.
No.
And then they get up on stage, and the first time through, you know, it's kind of predictable, and then with some coaching, and then they start investing in relationship, and in moments, they fulfill their potential as human beings, and they grow physically, they grow emotionally, they become a version of themselves that they've never really experienced before, and the audience sees them the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that moment when they bond. We are co-creating a version of me that I always knew was possible but never really thought would ever happen. And in this moment, it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want to do is not only travel the world helping people discover this version of themselves, but starting this year, we're going to start helping people facilitate this work.
Nice.
Right?
Love it.
So all of that is what I want my leadership legacy to be.
Yeah. And it is.
Yeah.
It is.
So far, so good.
The people that you've impacted here, again, this is my OD, organizational development, analytical mind come out. But the evaluations were phenomenal. Mm. It was like 97% was the return on investment. And that was with, I think it was like 23 out of 32 individuals who took the course, responded, to the evaluation. So you had a tremendous impact on Campitex, and we're lucky that you're going to continue. We're going to continue that relationship with you. So
I'm very excited to come back and see everybody and build on what we did.
Yeah, me too.
Excellent, Brenda. Thank you so much.
You are awesome. Thank you.
So that's our show for today. I want to thank my guests, Heidi Harris, Brianna Connolly, and Brenda Imes, all three extraordinary women who are doing great work and trying to show up better under stress and choose how they might show up under stress and being really transparent about what they're trying to get better at. These are proud members of the Connection Lab Network, and I couldn't be prouder to have them on board. And so are you, because you tuned in, you listened, so I really appreciate that too. Coming up, there will be more opportunities. Yes, there'll be another episode in just a few weeks, and I hope very much you'll tune into that as well. If you have any questions, you can text us at 646-780-9946. Until next time, thank you so much for tuning in. I'm your host, Russ Hamilton. This is Lab Notes, a Connection Lab podcast.
Thanks for listening to Lab Notes, the Connection Lab podcast. For more information about our workshops and executive development programs, you can email us at info@connectionlaboratory.com or go to our website, connectionlaboratory.com.